No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's BBS RadioOne. Today, we have two very special guests, two young, politically active, registered voters, one a young woman who is a liberal from a large urban center, the other a young man and a conservative Republican from the Southwest. We have spent the last several weeks discussing the current world situation with experts, so tonight we're going to hear what young Americans think. So please call in with your comments and questions and be part of the conversation. Again, the number is 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us. Before I go any further, let me introduce my co-host, Maria Sanchez. Hi, Maria. Are you ready?
Hey, Senator. How are you? How was your week?
I'm good. Good. How about you?
It was busy. I've got finals starting tomorrow, so it's the end of the semester.
Then you and Diego can commiserate, because Diego's about to graduate, and I'm sure he's got finals coming up. Let me just start by saying that there's nothing new to report on the statehood front. No new co-sponsors on our legislation. Politically, things are slowing down here in D.C. We're getting ready for the holidays. As you probably know, Hanukkah ends tomorrow. So to all our Jewish friends, we wish you a very happy Hanukkah. And I'm going to take the liberty of introducing our guests. Usually I leave that to my much more charming co-host, but since I'm personally connected to these guys, I'd like to introduce them. The first one of our guests, we're going to have them both on for a while at the same time, is Tricia Brown, a recent honors graduate of DePaul University, who is single and lives in Chicago and happens to be my daughter, lucky girl. And Diego Vlasic, also single, and as far as we know, and about to graduate from the University of Arizona in Tucson. I asked them to come on because over the years, I've talked to both these guys about politics, and I find that they're both very interesting and very engaged. And at one point, I said to myself, Maria, we ought to have them on the show because we ought to hear what young people have to say about politics. So here we are. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll start out with a question for you, Tricia. Today was the hottest day in the history of Chicago for December 13th. And the president has just reached an agreement with several countries on climate change. How do you feel as a young person about global warming? Is this something that concerns you very much?
I mean, I think it does. I think it's something that we're not necessarily worried about regularly. It's not at the forefront of our brains. But we do think about it, especially as, you know, kids living in a city that is supposed to be very cold right now. And definitely something that we notice. I think for the most part, I see young people doing what they can to help the climate issue, like recycling more. I know me and all the girls in my apartment that I live in, we all recycle, and you know, watching our carbon footprint and how much electricity we use, not buying bottled water, but you know, having reusable water bottle, those kinds of things. I think I see more and more kids doing. Then again, I live in a city where recycling trash cans are readily available at every corner. The city itself takes it very seriously. I don't know if the city I lived in, if they didn't take it seriously, whether we as young people would as much. But I think it's something we're concerned about. We're just not, it's not something that we're necessarily thinking about all the time.
Anything to add, Diego?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, it's been a very kind of hot issue now. It was actually just recently where they had the new, in Paris, the climate talks, which is really interesting. And it's actually something a lot of young Republicans tend to be fiscally conservative, so they tend to not think of climate change as importantly as job growth. I personally think it is an important deal. As long as it's not kind of, I think sometimes it's been used a bit to cover up other problems we're facing. But, I mean, climate change is definitely a factor that we all look through in Arizona. It is, and in California, too, they've had droughts over the last couple of years, and it's been very warm. So it is definitely a problem we can all feel.
Maria, do you have...
Well, I, first of all, Patricia and Diego, thank you for not only being a guest on the program today, but also for your political activism, because I have four children who are 20-something, and they're fairly apathetic, and it's ironic to me because I've been active since I was 18 in my party, and I keep wondering, when is the bug going to hit them? Because surely you can't always just sit on your hands and sit on the sidelines. So I appreciate the two of you with your youth and your exuberance actually walking the walk and talking the talk. For starters, registering to vote for others. I'm assuming you do vote. And that makes a difference. And it's nice to know because at some point, the senator and I have to hand the baton to the next generation. Yeah. And we want to make sure that they're informed and that they're passionate and that they're intelligent and that we're talking about the things that we need to talk about, not just frivolous matters. So I'm really honored to be with you today in that regard. And I'm just curious if either of you will speak to how it is that you came to have the philosophies politically that you do have today.
Well, for me, it was just living in the house that I lived in. I mean, clearly I grew up with a father who's very politically active and cares a lot about it. For a while, I tried to deny my interest in the subjects. I didn't really want to be affiliated with it because my dad was so affiliated with it. But just growing up, having the conversations or listening to the conversations that happened in my household, I think made me more politically aware than most young people my age have the opportunity to be, maybe. But so I think that would probably, I mean, I would say that, and the fact that I grew up in areas where it was talked about. I mean, a lot of kids grow up, I mean, although D.C. is an incredibly liberal area, the issues were still discussed. It wasn't necessarily, even though we all had similar opinions and similar values, we still discussed the issues. I know a lot of people grow up in areas where they're just not even discussed because they don't have to talk about them. So I think that was also a privilege growing up in an area where the issues have to be discussed. It made me more aware of it.
Which is an excellent point. But then on the other hand, you have my children where it's like, yeah, it's discussed. And they see, I mean, I've walked precincts. I do get out the vote phone calls. I've stuffed envelopes. You name it. I've been the campaign manager, et cetera. And my children are like, somebody else is going to take care of it. So see, my whole thing too, Patricia and Diego, is that regardless of how you feel, as long as you act in accordance with those feelings and you do try and make a difference, that's all that matters to me.
Yeah.
I mean, well, Patricia, your dad and I disagree in our orientation, but I can't fault somebody who's passionate and who wants to make a difference.
Yeah, I think too, it's that people...
Go ahead, Trisha, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just think that people, the people I surround myself with also want to have those conversations. I do know a lot of young people who are very active socially. I think more so socially when it comes to politics than financially, but fiscally. But I know a lot of people who really care about the social issues that are happening because they directly affect them, whether it has to do with the race issues in America that we have on right now, like police brutality, or it's to do with gay rights, gay marriage. I am a dancer. I grew up a dancer. So I know a lot of gay men who that directly affects. And I have a lot of friends who are Black who those issues directly affect. So I'm also having those conversations with the people that I'm around, with the young people that I surround myself with. And that's for a lot of people in America who come situations that don't necessarily these things directly affecting them. It's just not important or necessary for them to have those conversations. I wouldn't say the only factor that has to do with my active political life is my dad. I would say that that was just a big factor. Other things.
Diego, what about you?
Yeah, and let me just add, before you answer the question, Diego, I'd like to add to what Maria's saying. You grew up in a household with a liberal Democrat, yet you became a conservative Republican. Tell us about that as well, how you came to that.
I had grown up in New York City, and so it was a very liberal, as much as D.C., a very liberal community. And I think if you were to look on the echelons of conservatism, I'm probably not that far right. And I'm sure there's very many conservatives who probably say I'm a liberal. But I generally came out, you know, it was a very turbulent time. We had Rudy Giuliani was our mayor in the 90s in New York. And he kind of, I saw the change from just when I was a little kid to, you know, and then we had Bloomberg. And Bloomberg was a kind of unique person, had some weird ideas. But he was a very financially good mayor. And so when you look at New York, when I was growing up as a kid, just in my own neighborhood that I grew up in, you know, we had a lot of, there was crime, there was open prostitution, to now where I go there, and it is, the entire avenue that I lived off of, Third Avenue, is a trendy bar nightlife. So I definitely think that conservative, when it comes to finance, conservative policies work the best, just because they tend to be rooted on just facts and figures versus so I believe many more the liberal side tends to look at a more empathetic way, which has its pluses. But I think when it comes down to bottom line, and that's the Republican way, conservative way, is better. And that's why I became a conservative. And then coming out to the school here to a very conservative state, you know, it's definitely kind of interesting to see the two differences. And it's something that I think I've learned and kind of when Trisha was talking about, a lot of kids are becoming more and more politically active. When you look at our candidates, especially presidential politics has always kind of been seen as like the adult or the older person game. But now you have Bernie Sanders, who has a huge following among youth. And then you have on the other side Donald Trump, who, whatever you want to say about him, has a huge kind of grassroots, you know, of the people thing going for him right now. So I think definitely this is the time of such divisiveness between race relations and everything and terrorism that I think many young kids are saying, you know, we need to look a little bit more into this. And, maybe in a year or two, your children will see that, you know, it's something that this affects everyone. It's not something you can just let someone else handle, because it affects you personally.
Well,
I couldn't agree with you more, and I love that you have that awareness, because one of my personal adages is one voice, one vote, one paycheck. You know, what we say and do, how we spend our money, and how we vote affects all of us. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes people don't realize that one person matters.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Diego, one thing that I find very interesting is that, you know, Trisha brought up gay marriage. And it seems to me that as we've talked over the years, that as a young Republican, you're not nearly as interested in the social issues as some of the older members of your party. And you remind me a lot more of the Republicans that I grew up with, who were fiscally conservative and worried about liberty and the fact, you know, an intrusion by government. It seems like young people in your party are going back in that sense to a more traditional, you know, kind of Republicanism. And I also think that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are different sides of the same coin. I think they're both outside the box. I think liberals are attracted to Bernie Sanders for the same reason that conservatives are attracted to Donald Trump, because they're not seen as establishment candidates. How do you feel as a young Republican about Trump? You think he's leading your party in the right direction?
Well, I think the thing about Donald Trump is, I mean, he's someone I've actually followed. You know, he's from New York. I'm from New York, and I've kind of known of him for a long time. And he was actually probably the most socially progressive person of the race in the history. If you look at old interviews, Donald Trump was for partial birth abortion in the 90s. He was for gay marriage about probably 10 years before Hillary Clinton even was. So I think the thing is Donald Trump is Donald Trump, and he's the person we all know. And a lot of what he said, you know, he's made some comments that have socially kind of maybe put him as very conservative in regards to illegal immigrants or the new Muslim thing he brought up this week. But I do think that Donald Trump is very much for gay rights. I don't think if Donald Trump was elected that he would, you know, repeal the gay marriage law. Or I don't think he would end abortions in the same way where, say, Ted Cruz would try to. So I think the thing with Donald Trump is he's very divisive. I've either met people who really like him or who think he's going to hand the race over to Hillary Clinton. I've never met anyone who kind of is neutral on him. But he's, with the thing with the socials, you have very many, it kind of comes down to how religious, and I'm not blaming religion, but the more religious young conservatives I've met tend to be against a lot of these social things such as, you know, abortion and marriage, gay marriage and transgenderism. And then the more you have a lot of people who kind of just are pro-business, and they are socially probably no different than many liberals would be. So it depends on the person.
And Tricia, how about Hillary Clinton? Do you like her because she's a woman? Do you like her because she's a good candidate? Do you even like her?
I think at this point, when it comes down to the Democratic candidates, it comes down to who I think will get into office. I mean, I think that Bernie is really appealing to a lot of young people because young people are mad at the system, and that's what Bernie is saying is wrong. He's saying the system is wrong. We have to change the system. The way things run is wrong. How realistic that is, though, I don't know. And I think that in itself, that is slightly a form of manipulation. He's manipulating people to think that these are, you know, realistic ideas, that the things he wants to get done are things that could be done, and it's not that they can't. It's just that because he's so radical compared to a lot of the other people that have control in our government, the realistic, whether it's reality that those things will happen or not, I think should be questioned, and it's not. I actually recently had a conversation with a friend who was saying, you know, her boyfriend didn't vote because he hates the system. He doesn't like to the system. And I was like, well, regardless of whether he likes it or not, he's a part of it because he lives in this country. And so I think that is an idea that young people, young liberals, in my opinion, are missing sometimes. They don't realize that whether they hate the system or not, it's the system that we got. And I do think the system has a lot of flaws. I absolutely agree with Bernie on most things that he's saying. But whether I think that radical ideology will get him anywhere as president, I'm not sure. Whereas Hillary, I think, plays the game a little bit more. She understands the game she's playing. She's been a part of it for a very long time. And it's not as appealing at all to liberals. I mean, I know a lot of liberals who are very against Hillary. They don't really like her anymore because she's so wishy-washy on a lot of her ideologies and policies and stuff like that. But I think I think something that they're missing is that she understands the game that she's playing. And I think politics is one big game. And they have to understand that whether, you know, you can be the president of the United States, but if you don't have people on your side, it's not going to do you much good, especially with such with such a polarized Congress these days, you know, it's hard to get a lot of things, make a lot of decisions. So I think I absolutely see the appeal in Bernie. I absolutely do. I just don't know that he's right for the president, for being president in the system and society that we have right now, if it'll work. I mean, I think he's right, but I don't know if it would work. And I think that that's something young people don't think about. They don't really think about whether it would work or not. They only think about, you know, the appeal of that person.
Well,
we have Kathleen Gomez on line three.
Before we run to her, Maria, let me just say, just make this one comment that I think it's interesting, Tricia, that I would make the same comment I just made to Diego. I see him as going back to more conservative. I see you going the other direction, because when I was young, we all voted for George McGovern, even though we knew he didn't have a chance. So, you know, we were all kamikazes back then politically, and I think it's interesting as a liberal that you're more practical. Maria, you want to talk to our caller?
If she's still there. Kathleen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, you guys. I miss the program very much, and I'm shocked that I can get it here in Mexico.
Well, good. It's good to know we're international. But what's your question for our illustrious guest?
Well, I guess I want to ask Diego, as coming as his mother, as a very liberal, well, maybe not so liberal, but I got him involved in, you know, oversized classrooms in New York City were incredible, you know, 40 kids to a class, and he had to take a test on the floor. And I'm wondering if any of that has played into him being not a social conservative, but just a financial conservative.
I mean, I am socially conservative. I'm not as, I mean, I generally kind of tend to take a non-issue stance of it, where I would, like, for example, gay marriage, I would never, you know, actively try and, you know, make that illegal again or anything like that. But I'm not exactly, you won't see me at a gay pride parade either. I kind of tend to take a slightly apathetic approach towards most of those social issues, just because I think right now, with the way our economy is and the global situation, I just think that there are bigger fish to fry, so to speak, instead of worrying about who can get married or who is having an abortion or if, you know, Bruce Jenner wants to become Caitlyn Jenner. But it generally, I mean, I think the biggest thing was just I was became a conservative more just out of seeing, you know, in the 90s, there was a lot. I mean, even Bill Clinton was slightly more conservative than many, than, you know, a lot of Democrats now. And so, it seemed like it made more sense. And just looking at it, kind of as a kid growing up, with, like I said earlier, with Giuliani and Bloomberg, who were kind of, you know, in New York, those are, it's very similar to presidents. Those are like the biggest, the most powerful guys. And to see how they were working, that's where I really became a conservative. And I think the small class size isn't necessarily a liberal issue. I think everyone wants good education. So it's just was how I kind of started out.
And you believe in education? Do you believe in education?
I think everyone believes in education. I don't think it has to be public. I think if you can get a good charter school thing, just because, I mean, to quote a very common a very big Republican, Reagan, he said, you know, the scariest words are I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And I don't think the governments run programs particularly well. So I think if it's genuinely in the best interest of the students, I would support any sort of education system, whether it's public or private. But I definitely think.
And just one more question to both of you guys, and then I'll get off. How do you feel about the fact that our nation actually, you know, gives loans to students at such a high rate versus giving the same loan to banks at like 0.17%. So, and then I'll say goodbye. I just want to know what both of you guys think of that.
Trisha, you can go.
I mean, I think, in my opinion, higher education, public higher education, should be free. I think it's the reason that we have such little mobility in our country, from the lower and middle classes to the upper classes is education. I think it's inaccessible to a lot of people, and because they don't have access to that education, they don't have access to the monetary benefit of having that education. So I think it's, you know, we make the poor poorer by, you know, the kids who don't have the money to go to school taking out these incredible loans to afford to go to school, and then having to be in incredible debt for so long to pay them back after they leave school. And I mean, as a recent graduate, I understand the hustle of trying to find a job, which is not easy at all, no matter what school you've graduated from, no matter what education you have. It's not easy. I know a lot of people who got jobs basically through having connections, just because, you know, they were like, oh, I know a person who's gotten me this interview, because now you're sending in applications via online with thousands of other kids that they have to shuffle through to find, you know, the people that they're going to hire. It's just become such a saturated market that it's harder and harder for kids graduating from school to pay back those loans. So they can't pay them back. So they're deferring them. So their credit's getting worse. So it really doesn't help the problem at all. It's like, oh, well, we're giving these people an opportunity to get an education, but at what cost is it worth it? And I think that that is a question a lot of young people who don't have money or have the financial benefit of going to a college are asking themselves these days, whether it's worth it or not. I unfortunately have to go. I have to hop off, so I'm sorry I can't hear Diego's answer, because I'd be very interested to hear. But it was a pleasure being on the show. Thank you guys so much, and I would love to come back anytime if you'll have me.
Thank you, Patricia. Okay, happy holidays.
Thanks, Trisha. Have a great holiday. And Trisha let us know up front that she had a conflict, so we appreciate her coming on. And Diego's been gracious enough to agree to stay with us. What do you have to say to your mother's question there, Diego?
I think I would disagree slightly with what Patricia was saying, just in the sense of when you look at how our economy was run at its strongest point, was probably 1940s and 50s, all the way to 50s, 70s. The thing was is that very many, you know, not that many people had college degrees at that point, let alone masters. And one thing she said was it was oversaturated, the market, and it very much is. And I think it's so much is that now we have this thing where every student needs to go, at the very least, to a two-year degree, and to the point where they're even saying that it should be free, 2 years, similar to how Canada does it. But the point is if everyone has a two-year degree, those 2 years become worthless because everyone has it. So there's nothing... you might as well not do the 2 years because no one do the 2 years because that 2 years kind of equates itself out. It doesn't mean anything. And so really the thing is that, and this may sound harsh, is that college is not for everyone. We need to promote trade schools. You look across the country, there's huge deficits of electricians and plumbers and other traditionally blue-collar jobs, which actually pay very well, and even more, you can sometimes make more money than a college graduate now. So I would say that, you know, it is a thing, you know, a problem that it is high and it doesn't seem fair. But when you take those student loans, it's not a right. You have to, you are physically taking those loans out, and you need to look at it, not just say, well, I need to go to college for this necessity. You might have to look at it and say, in my financial situation, in my academic situation, can I get scholarships? Do I take these loans out and take the risk? Or maybe do I look at an alternative? Because unfortunately, college is not for everyone, and college was never meant for everyone. College was meant for people who want to go into very specific fields. And as unfortunate as it is, you know, it is expensive now. It's, you know, I mean, if you were to take U of A, for example, yeah, the out-of-state, and this is a higher number, is around $20,000 a semester. So this is it's very tough, but I think it's some people need to look at maybe other alternatives outside of four-year colleges.
Well, I'm sorry that Trisha left, because I'd like to ask her this question too. But just to follow up on your mom's question, do you believe, I think what she's really asking is, should we treat banks on Wall Street better than we treat students?
Well,
in terms of loaning them money.
Yes and no, because the biggest thing I have personally with that statistic, where people bring that up, is that banks, very rarely, you know, you had it in 2008, and I think you had it in 83. Most banks and financial institutions have very good credit and do not default on their loans very often. And when they do, they generally tend to get bailed out by the government. Students don't have that. So if you're loaning to a student, it's a much higher risk. I think now they're saying without the default, it was on freelance default, they say anywhere from 30 to 40 students may just default on loans just because they're physically unable to pay them back. Whereas, to my understanding, I can't think of a time where a financial institution went bankrupt and wasn't bailed out so that the money was sent back to the loaner. So you do have to take that into consideration. Is it too big of a gap? I think so. But I definitely think an unsecured student loan will naturally have a higher interest rate than a loan to a J.P. Morgan bank. I mean, it just financially has to.
It would be interesting if they would allow collateral with the loans, because I'm getting my master's in clinical psychology, and I'm paying almost $1,200 a unit. And as you can imagine, that adds up quickly. And I'm taking loans, and nobody's asked me. I've got some assets that have equity that I would be happy to use that as collateral to get a lower interest rate, but that conversation doesn't even exist.
Well, that's interesting.
Go ahead. I was going to say, that's actually a big, you know, I'm a finance major and marketing major, and that's a big part about it, is that banking, and it's actually kind of funny, with Donald Trump was saying, is banking has, they're taking advantage of the American people. I'm not denying that. And they don't want to, because they'd rather have the higher interest rate and not have the collateral, because at the end of the day, they'll be making more money. So there does need to be laws in place. I do think, you know, one thing that Bernie Sanders and I believe even now Hillary Clinton has promised is this kind of flat rate for loaning, and that's just, it just, you can't do that financially. So definitely that would be very interesting. That's something I haven't thought of, because I don't have any equity. But that would be definitely a very interesting thing, and, you know, whoever the president is, and that thing I would hope would look into.
Well, you know what? I just came up with the idea now with our conversation, because when, you know, Michael, with real estate, anything that has collateral, or the bigger the down payment, the less interest that you're charged, because
right.
You have more
and
skin,
you know,
in the game.
It's a very interesting idea, Maria, because you could, for people like Diego, a lot of them, like people like Trisha, we could have stood up for her. You know, we have collateral, and we could have been co-signers. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So for those students that don't have the collateral, maybe their parents, and let me tell you, none of my children would default on a loan that Mrs. Brown had co-signed. They'd be terrified to default on that loan. So, I think that's a very interesting idea, and it's a very interesting perspective you have on that, Diego.
Just to share with you, I'm fiscally conservative, but I'm really liberal socially. And some of my Republican friends have an issue with that, because I'm not lockstep with the party in that regard. In fact, I think abortion shouldn't even be in the party's platform. That's not a political mm-hmm. issue. That's a personal issue. So I always say, you know, the tent's big enough for all of us to have this conversation. We do have an R after our name, but it doesn't mean that we all feel exactly the same way, nor does it make one a better Republican than another, because they do fall in lockstep with the majority of what the people think a Republican is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm personally very jealous of the Democrat Party, in the sense that you have, you know, your far left kind of like eco people, you have your kind of establishment Hillary Clinton types, you have your Bernie Sanders fans, but whoever it is, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, or by some political chance, Martin O'Malley, whoever wins the nomination, all the Democrats will vote for them. And
right.
That's one of the things that the Republicans we have is that we say, you know, I'm a social conservative. So for me, it's Cruz, Carson, or Trump, or no one, or if I'm a establishment. So it's Rubio, Bush, or Kosich, or it's no one, or I'm a libertarian, and I only want Rand Paul, who is actually resigning next Tuesday. But that's one thing I'm always jealous of. They have that kind of cohesive unity that I think the Republicans, we've been a bit fractured, where I think a bit selfish, where it's been my way or the highway. And if you disagree with me on abortion, women's rights, or gay marriage, you know, you're not a Republican. You're just a Democrat. The rhino is the big word that he is. So I hope
Diego, I'm sorry to interrupt. I would say this is a big change, and I find it very encouraging, and I think Republicans should be encouraged by it, because, you know, the old maxim in Washington is that Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. And, you know, what you're talking about, which is a sentiment that obviously you feel inside the Republican Party, this really was something that traditionally had been ascribed to the Democrats. So it was the Democrats who were always fighting with each other and couldn't, you know, the most famous of all Democratic sayings was by an Oklahoman named Will Rogers, who said, "I belong to no organized political movement. I am a Democrat." And you know, that used to be the case, right? We were like herding cats, and the Republicans would all be, yeah, Ronald Reagan, great, let's all get behind him. And so it's interesting to hear that perspective. I'm sorry, Maria, do you have a question?
I just think that I agree with Diego. I think that the Republicans are more divisive, and what better example of that was with the debates for both parties. The Democrats were falling in line behind one another and exonerating Hillary Clinton, right, Clinton for Benghazi and the email server and all of that stuff publicly, right, instead of seizing on that as how we could differentiate ourselves from her, which the Republicans do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Which reminds me of... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the Republican debates have been, I think, a bit of a circus affair, in the sense of where I think it's become very much with this cycle where Republicans are just who can kind of get the most press time, which, because for Donald Trump it worked, but it only works for Donald Trump. And like for the last debate, or was it two debates, I think it was the Fox Business one, I just thought it was the weirdest thing. It was, you had Ben Carson saying he stabbed someone, and then you had Donald Trump saying he didn't. And I thought that was the weird, like, it was very much like, how did we get to this point where we're arguing over whether or not Ben Carson was a 17-year-old stabbed some kid in like a burger shop or something. So it's, you kind of have a bit of a kind of, with Donald Trump, he's changed the game up with his celebrityness. And I think, you know, you look now at Carson, Cruz, and Rubio, and even Bush, they're trying to, you know, become Donald Trumpish with their statements, and it's just, it doesn't really work for any of them. And the Democrats don't have that. They're still, you know, of the Barry Goldwater age Republican kind of way of doing it, where it's slightly more organized.
Well, you know, that reminds me of another famous saying in Washington, what goes around comes around, you know, because Democrats have felt that pain many times, exactly what you're talking about. That's how we felt about Ralph Nader when Ralph Nader got into the race and wouldn't leave. And of course, many, many people on the Democratic side thought that, liberal Democrats thought that if he would have just gotten out of the race at the end and his people would have come over to Al Gore, it would have been a whole different scenario. But it's, you know, you make a very, very interesting point, Diego, which I never thought about. And that is that the Republicans right now are going through much of what Democrats have gone through in the past.
But it's going on and on in California, too. There hasn't been a Republican elected to higher office since 2006. I mean, there are 15% more registered Democrats in the state than there are Republicans. Yeah. It just keeps getting bluer and bluer.
And what do you think about that, Diego? I mean, what do you think? Trump, again, do you think he's pushing the part? Is it a healthy thing in the long run that these guys are going at each other like this? Or and they're having secret meetings, which are not too secret, I might add, if they're on the front page of the New York Times and the Washington Post. But they're having meetings to figure out what to do with Trump at the convention and these other things. Are you going to emerge from this stronger, or you think this is hurting the party?
Well, I couldn't really say if we're going to be stronger or weaker. I do find Donald Trump extremely refreshing, and just a sense of where, you know, anyone who's kind of even been remotely in politics has known that, you know, it really has not been fair. And, you know, Donald Trump kind of came out of the race swinging and saying, you know, they're not being, even in the first debate with Megyn Kelly, saying, you know, they weren't being fair to me. And he basically, I mean, he's definitely shown, especially with this meeting with the broker convention possibility, he's definitely shown that if you are, you know, John Doe, who lives in, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, who, you know, has voted Republican his whole life, he's definitely has shown, you know, hey, a lot of these guys don't care about you. You're just a vote to them. And I think that's where his appeal comes from. And I think one thing that I think they're really helping is they didn't attack him ruthlessly. You know, he'll come out and say, you know, we need to ban, you know, if you look at what he says, we need to ban Muslim immigration until we can figure it out. And they just took it and said, hey, he says, you know, he hates Muslims, he's a bigot. And that just fuels the fire of his support, because they say, well, you know, Donald Trump said that these guys are going to go after him. Donald Trump said, you know, they're not what he's saying, he's for America, and these guys aren't. These guys are for themselves, and they're going to attack him. And so it definitely, I think there's been a bit of that establishment to the outsider thing, and I really do enjoy Trump, how he has kind of exposed that a bit. And whether or not he's president, I definitely don't think a guy like Bush or Kosich ever has a chance of winning an election, a Republican nomination, anytime soon. I think Donald Trump will, maybe, but I kind of think that we're going to have Republicans are going to have to put someone forward who maybe isn't quite as flamboyant as Donald Trump, but who still gives that sense of he's there for the people that Donald Trump has very much given to conservatives across the board.
But does a man that says, my dad gave me a small loan for $1 million, you know, 30 years ago, is this a guy that knows where you're coming from? Does he represent you? Because I know your mom and dad, and I'm betting that neither one of them is going to loan you $1 million.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny, and it is an interesting thing to say, you know, a man who's worth $8 billion is seen as the voice of the people. But I think the thing is, it's not even a money issue at this point. It's not a wealthy versus poor thing. It really, what it comes down to is, you know, Donald Trump's been very open. He said, you know, I've used the bankruptcy law four times. I was one of these guys. I was, you know, a great example of it is Mark Zuckerberg with his $45 billion donation to a not-for-profit in his name that's not taxable that he controls. Is very much, you know, he's basically saying, look, all these guys are doing it. The person who's paying the taxes is the dentist, is the plumber, is the maid, is the nurse. It's you guys. And so I think the money situation isn't even so much the problem. It's the fact that he's basically saying these people are not being fair. These people are taking advantage of you, and you're getting screwed. And that's what's resonating with people. And I think, you know, the fact that he's in his, you know, however many $1 million jet, and he goes, you know, and he has a supermodel wife, and he has all these buildings. I don't think people care about that. I think people say, you know, he's basically saying, you know, he's saying, yeah, you know, how come my house property taxes went up, 5% across the country last year, but Apple hasn't paid any taxes. But, you know, these bankers have gotten away with all this stuff. I mean, and I think one thing is, if he runs against Hillary Clinton, is that she's going to have a lot to answer for, because she's very much the establishment candidate. She is the Wall Street candidate. So I think, at least from what I've talked to, that it's not the money, it's the outsiderness that is what people rally behind Trump.
Well, I agree with you. I think that it's interesting that a billionaire is the non-establishment candidate.
He's the voice of the Republican grassroots people, and not only Republicans. I mean, there are many Democrats who, even if they won't vote for him, I know a bunch of Democrats who said, you know, he about 50% of the time he's 100% right, which is probably a pretty fair assessment of Donald Trump.
Well, you know, it's funny that I think that you and Tricia are saying very much the same thing, that, you know, Sanders, the love for Sanders comes from the same thing that the love for Trump. I think you're saying that the same thing there, that, you know, Sanders is saying these people are taking advantage of you, and Trump is saying these people are taking advantage of you. And I guess that's the message that needs to come across to American politicians is, hey, America thinks you're taking advantage of them.
Yeah. You know, and I personally believe that this election will not be determined in the general election. I think it's going to be determined in the primaries, because I very much doubt you're going to have a Trump-Hillary or like a Bernie-Rubio. I think it's going to be a Rubio-Hillary or a Trump-Bernie Sanders kind of thing. I think it's going to be very much primaries.
Come on.
Hello, Maria, can you hear us? We hear Maria, but Maria's not hearing us for some reason. Let me ask you another question. There you are, but you're in Arizona, a conservative state which loves guns. Given what's just happened in Paris and happened in California, how do you feel about guns and your party's position on guns? I mean, do you think that's hurting you, that the Republican Party standing seems to be standing firm on its support of the Second Amendment and no new gun laws?
Well, I personally, you know, New York has one of the toughest gun laws in the country, so I never, you know, grew up around guns. I never don't know a ton about them. So I'm pretty, I've never been someone, you know, kind of was born and bred into the kind of gun culture, so that's a very different thing. In regards to Paris and San Bernardino, there is a valid point of where those two places have tough gun control. There hasn't been a mass shooting really stopped by a good right. gun yet that I've heard of.
Right.
But also, I don't think gun control, you know, having a million guns on the street or having no guns, I don't think that's going to change it either way, because you can get a gun illegally relatively easy. You know, maybe is it because we have all these guns around? Possibly. But I think if you banned every gun today and every, you know, person turned in their guns, I think that it's not going to really change much. And I think we have to look at the root of the problem of Paris and San Bernardino, which is just, it's both a cultural and unfortunately a religious problem that we have, where, you know, out of these mosques, we have a couple bad apples. We have these radical terrorists, but then on the other hand, you know, I find it very hard to believe that no one, you know, I feel like if, say, I were to be, the next Timothy McVeigh and blow up a government building, I would have a feeling my mom would have some inkling of that, you know, my brother, my close
right.
friends would have, you know, you don't just snap one day, buy an armored SUV, multiple weapons, get an ISIS sympathizer, an extremist wife, and then kill a bunch of people. That was definitely something that was slowly rooting through. And I think, you know, I definitely very much appreciate everything the Islamic community has done to denounce it and raise money. But I think, unfortunately, they need one more step, and that step is to proactively fight it. You know, if they
right.
see people who are buying into radical Islam, they can't say nothing. They need to report it or figure it out, because if they don't do that, you know, me, I'm not a Muslim. I have no idea who's radical or not. There's nothing I can do. And you know, the very many great Muslims in this country need to separate themselves and look at who in their community is radical and basically, you know, I mean, if they want to be Americans, if they, you know, love America like they say they do, and I think they do, they need to say, you know, enough is enough and really combat that.
By the way, I'm back. My Skype had been acting up, so I apologize.
Well,
I wanted to go back, though, Michael, to a question
that
you asked Diego about Trump and his wealth. How many Democrats have there been that come from wealth? Kennedys and DuPonts and Pritzkers and, I mean, I don't think that wealth is a Republican, exclusive event.
No, but it's, you know, it's an old, I don't know exactly what to call it exactly, but it's an old thing in politics, right, that we always, and maybe it's a liberal Democrat thing to say can you really feel my pain? And that's what we say as politicians, right? The most powerful thing I can say is I'm like you. So if I'm a veteran, you know, I want to stand out there and tell you I'm a veteran because I want all the veterans to say, yeah, I'm going to vote for this guy because he knows what it feels like to be me. And so a canard, I guess it's an old Democratic canard to ask that question. But I don't think I could answered the Muslim question any better than you did, Diego. I absolutely agree with you 100%. And I don't know how you feel about this, Maria, but I feel, yes, that I'm happy that Muslims are denouncing this stuff, but I think they really need to step it up and intervene. I think that's the next important step for them, is to intervene in the process, do what they can to help.
And it is unfair, but you know, they have a thing, you know, we're guilty for the sins of our fathers. And in that sense of, you know, when you have someone in your community, you have a small minority, you know, it does, you know, and they say, you know, we shouldn't have to, and you're right, they shouldn't have to, but they do at that same point. They need to, it is impossible for people, you know, for us three who are not Muslim, who are not that well educated in the Arabic culture, for us, you know, for me, you could put a radical extremist and an innocent Syrian refugee, and I'm honestly, I couldn't tell you which one was which, because I don't know enough about it. I don't know enough about their hadith and their fatwas to know what, you know, what they believe. The people who can are the, you know, extraordinary Muslims we have now. They would be able to tell that in the same way where I would be able to tell, you know, a good conservative versus some like a Timothy McVeigh or a Dylan Roof. I could be able to tell those two, and if I were ever to come across that, I would raise that alarm. And I think that that's really, if the Islamic community really wants to be accepted by Americans and they want to show that they're on our side, that would be the best thing that they could do, you know, groups like CARE.
I agree. Well, we're out of time, and I want to thank Diego for being with us. I'm sorry that Tricia had to leave to go to work at the last minute because her terrible dad no longer supports her, but we thank her too. And you know what? I don't know. I'm going to give Maria the last word. But to listen to the two of you, Diego, gives me great hope for the future. I think you guys are really engaged and really had great answers, and you really make me hopeful. Maria?
I just wanted to thank you, Senator, for the opportunity every week to have these important discussions, and Diego, to thank you for helping to ensure that our future is in good hands, and I'm really going to be watching for what you do and how you do it, so thank you for that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, let me tell you just, Maria, that knowing Diego, someday he will be a billionaire with a supermodel wife, so we have to keep an eye on him. All right.
Well, those are nice shoes to fill, Diego, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'll have my own gold tower on the Upper West Side.
Yeah. There you go.
Don't forget your godfather. Okay.
Right.
Thank you, America. We'll see you next week. Thank you, Diego. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Senator.
You guys, everyone, have a good night.
Okay. You too.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.